Welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and a toy that made me feel like a scientist was all the like lotions and creams and stuff in our bathroom, which I would like mix up into some sort of wasteful nightmare potion. And that's it. That's it. I felt like a scientist.
I'm Matthew Gatos, and my notes say the exact same thing. I have the toy that made me feel like a scientist wasn't really a toy, but when I was really young, I'd keep multiple empty shampoo and conditioner bottles in the bathroom so that during bath time, I'd make weird concoctions of mixing soaps and lotions and things, and I'm not sure what I was really trying to produce, but it definitely felt like I was doing something sciencey at the time.
At least you had the decency to do it during bath time when it was easy to clean up.
This is true, yes. It was only a bath time activity.
My name is Marines, and I have a very similar thing. But instead of like lotions, yes, and shampoo and stuff, but also food. I did a lot of like weird food combinations that I thought were, it made me feel sciencey. I know like baking and cooking is adjacent, but weird concoctions in the kitchen were always my like prime, I feel like a scientist doing this moment.
I love this for all of you. And my name is Sari Riley, and the toy that made me feel most like a scientist, it was like an oven that you put in plastic bugs in, or like goop, and then you baked it, and then you pulled it out. It was called Creepy Crawlers. Mm-hmm. It smelled horrible, but it made me feel very cool and like I was making things.
And this time on Cooler Than Homework, we are talking about The Other Me, which has to do with toys that make you feel like a scientist, maybe?
Yes. I would also, before getting into this plot synopsis, I just want to say that, Sari, the first half of your guess last episode was pretty darn close to what happened here. I mean, I feel like The Other Me is like, you know, it was kind of a giveaway to what was happening, but you got like the whole clone thing pretty good. So, you know, props to you on that one. We are dealing with a clone in this movie. So we meet the main character, Will Browning, who is, like, I guess, I don't know, nerdy. The only thing that they really showed us about why he's uncool is like, he plays with a yo-yo. And it was like, ooh, really uncool. He's also bad at school, but he's got a smart sister, and there's sort of a bully at his school, and also a girl who likes him, which he isn't into for reasons undisclosed. We meet him like at school and see that he's doing bad at school. It's also report card time. So when he gets back home, his parents are really disappointed in his report card and say that they're going to send him to a summer camp that is going to get him in line. I didn't really understand the summer camp. This is already showing how much attention I was paying.
It was like a weird boot camp boarding school type of thing.
Correct. I don't know why that would help him with his grades, but fine. He was going to go to boot camp summer camp. In order to avoid this fate, Will has to bring up his grade in science by completing a science project, and he sees an advertisement for something called Ocean Pups, where you can kind of grow your own weird little animals at home. So, you know, a toy that made you feel like a scientist. We really are good about bringing this all around here. So Will orders these Ocean Pups, and we cut to like the factory where the Ocean Pups are made, and it's these two kind of inept scientists, except for that they've also invented cloning. So like on the upstairs of their lab, they're cloning mice.
They're hyper cloning.
Important distinction. It happens real fast.
Hyper cloning. So they successfully hyper clone a mouse, but then they are just like, cool, we did it, and they leave, and the mouse gets away from its cage, and then they also have a cat in a cage, and the cat escapes its cage and starts chasing the mouse, and uh-oh, the hyper cloning solution spills and then leaks onto a specific box of the ocean pups on the plastic, but also I guess it takes the product inside. You know, the science is great here. So that specific box of ocean pups gets sent to Will Browning, and he starts to, you know, mix his hyper, or he starts to mix his ocean pups kit, but then he uses his comb, his hair comb, to mix the solution. And so the hyper cloning formula that was in the ocean pups clones him. He gets a clone of himself. Will is kind of spooked out by this, and he calls the ocean pups company, and they don't really help. So he's just like, cool, I guess I have a clone now. Best science project ever. And he calls his clone Tui. Tui has, I don't know, like at first he can't talk at all, but then he's like, yeah, I can talk. And then he reads a whole science book and he gets really smart. So it's like some really weird knowledge gaps. Like he knows certain things, but other things, like he doesn't know how to get dressed, but he does know science from the science book.
There wasn't a getting dressed book, Mari.
I know, silly me.
Great point.
Yeah. So yeah, like he can read, but no social norms. So Will decides that Tui can like go to school instead of just being his science project. What really needs to happen is that Tui needs to go to school because he's smart. He's memorized the science book. And so he trains him up a little bit to like recognize his friends and like walk like him and I don't know, things like that, and sends him off to school. And lo and behold, Tui is great at school. He makes friends. He gets the bully over on his side. He starts like a little dance riot in the cafeteria, which everybody loves. Everybody loves that a lot. Meanwhile, Will is just home playing video games, kind of having fun at first. But then it turns out being home all the time is not that fun. So he starts to resent it. Very topical. Feel this deeply. Will also like is not above still sending Tui to go do the stuff that he doesn't want to do. So he sends him to go visit with his sick grandpa. And even the sick grandpa is like, I like this kid. And talks to Tui, which he hadn't talked to anybody in a long time. So Will reaches like peak resentment over the fact that Tui is better at his life than he is. And Tui gives him like the big lesson, or talking to, I don't know, the speech about how Will is just too afraid of what other people think of him and he just needs to be himself. Tui is sad though because he is no one. He doesn't have a life or a family. This is not funny, but
it's very sad. He is sad. He's no one. That's what happened.
Oh, sorry. I'll try and do that with more composure. So he has no life and no family. And so he decides he wants to go find himself in New York. And Will says that first, at least, Tui should go to the school dance for one last bit of fun as Will. And, you know, he can go date this girl that is clearly into him that Will had no interest in. But all through all of this, I guess I should have mentioned that the scientists like figure out what has happened, that their like hyper cloning solution got spilled, and they trace it back to Will because of that panic call that he placed at the beginning. And so they go to Will's house and they're like staking it out, and they at first aren't sure what's happening, what got cloned, but then they put it together that Will cloned himself. So they're trying to kidnap the clone because the clone is going to die eventually. Like it wasn't like a permanent cloning solution, it was like a temporary cloning solution,
just like randomly introduced this detail, like just while they're sitting outside his house.
Because if you're going to invent hyper cloning, you're also going to put like a time, like it's a 4-week clone.
Well, and it's weird because they kind of try to hint at that at the beginning. It's like on the ocean pups box, it says like they live for a month, and it's like, yeah, that kind of makes sense, but that also means that this technology is in both the ocean pups and the cloning, like not just the special mixture that he got, but in all of the ocean pups, they also die after a month. So for some reason you were like, yeah, let's just build that into the hyper cloning.
Correct. So as Tui is heading off to the dance, Will sees that like the scientists are trying to get him, but they aren't successful. His best friend shows up, so Tui gets to go off to the dance, but Will intercepts them and like steals their formula that is supposed to undo the self-destruct clone thing. So he grabs it and he runs away, and he makes his way to the dance as well to try and warn Tui or save Tui. So there's this whole like, you know, montage of happening at the dance, but also people are seeing the two different Will and Tui's and getting all confused and whatnot. So eventually the bad guys, are they the bad guys? They're just kind of scientists. The scientists capture Will thinking that he's the clone. They kidnap him. Okay, that makes them bad guys. You don't kidnap children.
They were trying to not be kidnappers. They rationalized it within themselves. They were like, if we're taking the clone, he's right. Our property, and that's, there's no laws against clone napping, but we won't be kidnappers. But then they end up being kidnappers.
I hate when that happens, you know.
Yeah.
So they grab the real Will, and then they're like, oh no, maybe we have the wrong one, we have to get the other one. But oh wait, also the Wills, Will and Tui have like a psychic connection, you know, like sometimes twins have. And so they can like kind of hear each other or like sense each other. So Tui finds the real Will and like unties him, lets him go, and then they have like a fight. Very Home Alone-esque in the way that they like take on the scientists, and it's kind of like that sort of slapsticky sort of thing as they're taking on the scientists. And just at the right moment, his best friend and his new best friend, who was once his bully, show up to get in on this action as well. And as Tui starts to vanish,
he's like glowing.
Decompose. They give him the unself-destruct solution formula just in time, and Tui is here to stay. The cops show up and everybody's like, what's going on? And Will comes up with the amazing explanation that it is his identical twin, Gil, from Belgium.
Cousin, identical cousin.
Oh sorry. Identical cousin, Gil, from Belgium. And everybody's like,
much more believable.
Okay, that's the story we're going with. And they take Gil home. And then Will is like, can we keep him, Mom and Dad? and then Tui goes, oh, and they ask Tui, what do you want? And he's like, a family. So I guess they're going to keep him and just tell everybody he's Will's identical cousin.
From Belgium?
The end.
So before we talk about all of that, Matt, where is the cast of this movie now?
Mostly, they're in Canada.
Oh, I love that for them.
I too want to be in Canada.
I'm just going to lead off this segment by saying that some of the people on this list maybe don't have a ton to say about them, but almost a blanket statement for the majority of the people in this movie, they're where they are now is acting in TV shows in Canada that you probably haven't heard of unless you live in Canada. Mm-hmm. That's my experience when going through the cast list, at least.
Listen, if anybody in Canada wants to get married so that I can move to Canada, then I will I will be able to better represent your media on this podcast. I'm just putting it out there.
That's a big commitment.
Yeah, both marriage and watching all their TV now. Like, that's two big things in your life.
I hate it here, okay?
Give me Canadian Netflix and citizenship.
I'm ready, okay?
So I'll start off with Tyler Hines, who plays Scotty DeSota, who was the bully turned not bully. I wanted to mention him simply because he is one of the many people who is continuing to act on a bunch of Canadian TV shows. But one that people in America may have heard of is that he plays Dirks on Letterkenny.
Nope.
I know people who watch Letterkenny. I'm not one of them, but I know it's a show that people enjoy. So I wanted to mention it. Next up, another person who is also on Letterkenny now. We have Sarah Gadon. Who knows? She plays Heather in this, who is the crush. I guess she has the crush on the clone and Will. But Will, yeah, it's her. We will see her again in another movie for this podcast. But she has continued acting a lot in Canadian TV shows as well. Most recently, though, she's been in the Hulu adaptation of the Stephen King story 11/22/63. She plays a big role in that. And then she's been in True Detective and Castle Rock. And like I said before, she's also in Letterkenny. Continuing with Canadians who do stuff still, we have Scott McCord, who plays Victor. If that doesn't sound familiar to you after having watched this movie, Victor was the tall, skinny, bad scientist man with like the Hawaiian shirts. He continued acting, like I said, pretty much like everyone else on this list. He is doing a ton of voice acting now and is also in a band called Scott McCord and the Bonafide Truth.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That will be my new favorite band when I become a Canadian citizen.
I think it's required as part of the citizenship test. Yes. They'll ask you what your favorite band is, and you have to say that. Which, do you remember the name, Nicole?
Scott McCord and the Bonafide Truth.
Amazing. Yeah, you're Canadian already.
I was very curious getting to him in this section because he looked sort of familiar to me, but it's just my newfound face blindness. He looks kind of like the kid from Stranger Things who looks like the guy who plays John Ralphio, I think. Like, they're all different stages of the same human. And so I was like, oh, maybe Matt's going to say something that I recognize this Canadian man in. The answer is no.
No. Sorry. I mean, he's been in some things, so there's a chance you have seen him. He has, like, over 100 credits on IMDb, but most of them are voice acting, so.
Most likely not. Most likely I'm just tired.
Yes.
Correct.
Next up, the other bad man scientist whose name was Conrad. If I don't know, I don't remember their names being said in the movie, but maybe they did. He is played by Joe Griffasi. Yeah, we're going to go with that. I recognized him as the really obnoxious bank guard from Batman Forever, but I'm probably the only person who did. He continues to act in lots of things from 13 Going on 30 to The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel to Law & Order SVU. So he's one of those guys who's just in a lot of things. Somebody who's not in a lot of things is Brendan Jefferson, who plays Chucky, the best friend of Will and Tui. He was a child actor. He showed up in Full House and Xenon and Even Stevens. Most notably, he played Radar in Holes, but doesn't seem to be acting anymore and hasn't really acted pretty much since Holes. And I couldn't find like anything about this man or what he's up to these days. So no idea what Brendan Jefferson is up to.
He peaked. He was like, I did Holes and I'm done. Like, you know, what else do I have to do now? Yeah.
And I feel like at this point in 2020, like, we can answer that about most, like, what is anybody doing these days? I don't know, staying home, doing nothing. Yeah. That's what that guy is up to.
At home doing nothing. Next up, we have the dad, who was played by Mark L. Taylor. I did not recognize this man, but I feel like I should have after I looked up his credits, because he was in Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Arachnophobia, Homeward Bound, and another film that we'll get to talk about on this podcast at some point. He's still acting, most recently in How to Get Away with Murder, Grey's Anatomy, and the new Disney Junior Rocketeer animated series. So he's another one who's just got a ton of things, and you've probably seen him in one of them, but he was that for sort of like face blindness thing where I was like, I've seen him in multiple things and he does not look familiar to me at all.
This is wild. It's like a really long list of things. Holy shit.
Yeah. And like things you've probably seen.
Uh-huh.
It's like, yeah, I think he's in like two of the Honey, I Shrunk the movies. And so he must be a prominent character, but I don't remember him. And I literally just watched the first two of those movies like a few months ago. So, sorry, Mark L. Taylor. Next up, we have the mom, played by Lori Hollier. She has continued acting. She is, again, doing a lot of Canadian TV shows and movies that I have not heard of, so she may be really recognizable to our Canadian listeners. But most recently, she's been in a handful of Hallmark Channel Christmas movies, including Christmas with Holly, Christmas in Love, Our Christmas Love Song, and Christmas Inheritance, which is, I think, a Netflix one, not a Hallmark Channel one, but, you know, it's the same kind of thing. And then she also played Betty Ford in an episode of Mrs. America. Next up, I feel like it's sort of like the elephant in the room. It's Allison Pill playing Alana, the older sister, who's obviously very much still acting in many, many things like Scott Pilgrim, The Newsroom, Midnight in Paris, Star Trek Picard, American Horror Story. I mean, she's Allison Pill, so people know her.
Does Sari know her?
I did also maybe recognize her face, so my guess is I know her from Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah. She is the drummer in Scott Pilgrim.
Then yes, I do. She was the other one I was going to ask about, but so one for two is pretty good for me, I would say.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm proud of you.
And last but certainly not least, the man we've already talked about once before on this podcast, so I won't go through everything he's been up to since this, but we have Andrew Lawrence playing Will Browning and Tui. We talked about him in the Horse Sense episode where he starred with his older brother, Joey. He's still acting and directing, like we talked about in that episode. After the other me, he went on to be the voice of TJ on Recess, and we'll be talking about him at least once more on this podcast. Most recently, though, since the last time we discussed him, he went on to write and direct the film Money Plane, which also stars all three Lawrence brothers. But on top of the Lawrence brothers being in that film, it also stars Kelsey Grammer, Denise Richards, and WWE wrestler Edge in a film about a bulletproof casino in the sky that has cryptocurrency, and then there's a heist, and they have to break into the plane casino.
Amazing.
Wow. What? That's a lot of words you just said.
Yeah. I used to be on another podcast called Real Bad a lot, and I think if that podcast was still going, we'd probably be doing an episode about Money Plane based on the trailer. And I feel like I need to see it because it's got so many things I like. I like Frasier, I like wrestling, I like the Lawrence brothers. It's a trifecta of a perfect movie for me.
Maybe you'll be that movie's one and only like true fan.
Yeah, just look out for my Money Plane tattoo.
Sari, I'm curious at what point you recognize if you did the Lawrence brother. Like, were you like, hey, I saw that guy before?
No, I'm like, I googled his picture as soon as Matt said that. I was like, should I have known? His face was rounder and his hair was longer, so
yes,
for some
yes.
reason.
Wait, you didn't recognize him from Horse Sense?
No.
Sari,
I don't know if it was because I wiped Horse Sense from my memory or if he like looked significantly different to me. Probably a combination of the two.
Wow. He is older here a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah,
or he looks a little older.
He looked different enough, and I've lost that many brain cells that no clue that I had seen him before. I was focused on tall scientist and his sister.
The best part is, though, that when we talked about Horse Sense, we made this whole thing about how the Lawrence brothers would be back. And you were like, no, they're going to be back? And then they were back. I mean, at least one of them was. And you're like, I don't know that man.
Well, now he's going to be back again. And I'll feel really bad if he gets another haircut and I don't recognize him again.
I'm willing to bet the next time he's back, you're gonna remember him.
Okay.
That's all I'll say. I think there's gonna be some hints in the next one that will help you remember him.
Cool. The other me. I'll look out for it.
Horse Sense 2. Horse Sensier.
This time he clones a horse. The wounds collide.
Wait, now I'm confused. Is it like a brothers? Are we actually going to get all of the brothers? Is that the deal? Okay.
I think it is somewhat of a sequel to Horse Sense that we get, but it's not called Horse Sense 2. And I think it's like a very loose sequel.
Oh. Fantastic.
I have no idea when we get that one.
Given how much we all loved Horse Sense, I can't wait to watch the sequel. Okay, so the other me nostalgia check. Do you remember watching the other me at any point before you watched it for this podcast. My line is like, do you remember watching this as a kid? But I feel like I've lost. Sari's the only one who's still a kid, maybe. Like, I don't know. I don't know how time works.
We're in the year 2000.
Okay, okay.
Oh, we're in 2000.
All right. I was still a preteen. Child. Anyway, did you watch this movie before 2020?
Nope.
I did. Yes, I remember watching it.
I did not. I have no. I don't think I have ever seen this movie before in my life. Or if I did, I have completely forgotten it, which is possible.
And I definitely haven't.
Did you enjoy this experience that you just had?
I'm going to go ahead and just start and jump in because I feel like I have some very specific thoughts. I thought I liked this movie. And then the more I sat with it, the less I liked it. Like the more I think about it and the more we talk about it, the less and less I like it. I think similarly to Quince, it felt like it should have been like 30 or 40 minutes shorter. Like there's a lot of fluff surrounding what I think is an okay idea at the core of this. And I think similar to Quince, when they were just like, let's toss this weird crosstown chase scene in at the end. This was the like, at the end of this, they were like, let's toss Home Alone into the end of this movie so that we can finish it and have enough time to be called a movie. And I felt like the whole time we were just like on the cusp of learning a lesson and we never quite got there or got the payoff because it was all about like pointing out, and they did this like two or three times, that like Will could be just as good as Tui. Like they're identical, they're genetically the same. But if he applied himself and wasn't afraid, he could be just as good. And they don't. Like, that doesn't go anywhere. He, like, doesn't, like, change. He doesn't, like, at the end, they're not like, oh, well, now he's a good student because he applied himself. And so it's, I don't know, it's strange that, like, Will doesn't seem to be changing at all, really, because even when Tui wants to run away to New York, he's like, okay, well, go have one more last night of fun, and then I'll let you go to New York, and my problems are solved. And it just feels weird. And then we get the end where they accept that, like, okay, now they're both just going to exist and they're both, I guess, going to go to school together. And it raises too many questions for me of, like, who's going to get those good grades?
Who's going to get the girl?
Yeah, who's going to date Heather? And, like, the main thing I feel like is the biggest thing for me that, like, is just so left open that, like, Mari brought up in the plot synopsis is that we start off talking about the science project and how big this, like, of a deal this is. This is why he orders the ocean pups. When he gets the clone, he's like, well, this is my science project. And then we don't, like, cut back to the science fair at the end of the movie. And so, really, this is a pitch for me to say that I think Tui should have died. I think it would have been much more poetic if Tui had died. He, like, chose his non-existence, or they broke the vial of stuff he was supposed to drink or something. He died, and to honor him, Will vows to be a better person and becomes a better student in Tui's honor.
I firmly agree. Tui shouldn't be alive at the end of this movie. I'm all in on that pitch. I like the thing shouldn't have worked or something. Like I don't know how exactly we get to that, but like nothing in this movie made sense, so it doesn't really matter. The point is that like this movie raised 1,000 ethical questions that it didn't touch any of them. It just said, like, we're going to toss all these things out there and, like, do with that what you will. It was okay. It was fine. Like, to answer the question, though, of whether or not I liked it, I feel like I had a perfectly pleasant experience that I will forget, probably. Or I will be thinking about all of the ethical questions that it raised, and I will gradually keep moving it down the list of movies every time we record this podcast. I'm not sure yet. I feel like, though, looking at the list, I probably won't, because even though I hate all of the like big ethical questions that it didn't answer, like about Tui's existence and like the science ethics of like just everything about these scientists and their commitment that they now own a human being, and like all of that, like there's a lot going on there. But would I rather watch that movie again, or would I like to watch The 13th Year again? I do not want to watch The 13th Year again. So, if I had to choose, yeah, this, I don't know. It's just like right in the middle.
This is how I feel too. And in the biggest plot twist of the century, I don't know if it's like the pandemic brain getting to me. I don't know if it's the fact that I got a flu shot and then watched this movie, so my arm was sore. I didn't think at all about the science. Like, whatever you said, Nicole, about like ethical dilemmas doesn't matter. That's how I felt watching this entire movie. And so it was upper middle for me. Like, I ranked it. I just, while you were talking, shuffled it around. It's 9th. So like, top half of movies for me. I totally agree that Tui should have died. I kept switching back and forth on whether he would or wouldn't. And then right before he got the serum, I was like, oh, he's going to die. It'll be wrapped up. And then he lived and I was like, well, bummer. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was very wholesome. And I think because I didn't think, I just really... I thought it was nice that the message of this movie was like, be yourself. If you're a clone and know nothing about social norms, people will like you or they won't. Doesn't matter.
Well, we got like real nihilistic Sari on this episode.
No. I was expecting like a really impressive science corner Sari. Yeah. I was not prepared for nihilism Sari, but it makes sense.
You know, when you have a story and you're like, this story is not going to matter and it's not going to go anywhere. So this is one of the stories I have. As you guys are talking, I realized that I definitely did watch this movie when I was younger, and that ending where I was also expecting him to die, like I had in my head that Tui dies. But I think I'm confusing this with another movie that we used to watch all the time when we were kids, and I was just Googling furiously to figure out what the freak this movie was. And apparently it's a German movie.
What?
That me and two other German kids ever saw, made in 1989, called The Whiz Kid. It follows the same thing, like a smart kid who clones himself and sends that kid clone off to live a better life or whatnot. And I'm pretty sure, I think the clone dies in that one. Anyway, the point is that I'm confusing that movie and this movie in my head. Neither movie is good.
Although I you say it's not good. The short little sentence I just saw when I looked up The Whiz Kid says Bodo is a kid with abnormally high intelligence, a samurai sword toting father, and a robotic orangutan. So if we're gonna say which movie's better, that one's at least more interesting.
Well, I would agree. Probably yes, but also I haven't rewatched this one, and I did rewatch the other me. So the one that lives worse in my memory is the one that I finished watching 20 minutes ago.
Also, like, small things about it, like, it was, I thought yo-yoing was like cool at this time. Like, there was like a yo-yo fad that was happening in like the late 90s that I feel like wasn't over, or at least not the kids at my school were not that harsh about like yo-yoing kids. I don't know if that was just my school that liked yo-yos, but when the movie like started off by being like everyone making fun of him for playing with a yo-yo, I was like, okay, this is like a weird bizarro world.
It was like a weird, I don't know, I was also like surprised how quickly we went from weird yo-yo kid to clone. The whole setup was just really rushed in that way. And I think that other DCOMs have been better about showing us, like, you know, the outcast kid or whatnot. This one just really relied on the yo-yo thing. And even like the character's attitude at the beginning, where he's like, everything will be absolutely fine, but he's failing all his classes. And then we never see this sort of like optimism from him or anything as like a personality trait. It was just a weird introduction thing. The whole intro threw me off. And then the whole ending was bad because, you know, the clone should have died. So.
Well, and it's interesting that, like, we experience this movie, obviously, because we're, like, supposed to relate with him. Like, we experience it through, like, Will's point of view. So for a lot of the movie, we're just hanging out at home with Will, and his clone comes home, and then we see, like, the ramifications of the cool, fun things his clone is doing. So we start to, I think, feel like Will feels, where we're like, man, I wish I was watching the fun stuff. I wish I was like seeing the cool things you're doing, but instead we're just watching this kid play video games and eat popcorn and then hearing about the cool fun things.
You've thought so much about this.
I did.
I'm like wrapping my brain around that statement. I'm like, yeah, we didn't see anything, but I had a great time anyway. And I don't know why. Like, I cannot mention one thing that made me have a great time. I like the boombox kid in the oh, dance scene in the cafeteria. He was hilarious.
Yeah. My favorite is how much he misses the buttons by. He like reaches over the boombox, hits the speaker, and then like the boombox starts playing.
That was a whole category in my very minimal notes, was hands that are doing things that they shouldn't be. Like when Will walks up to his locker first thing, he just kind of like futzes around with his hand, but isn't like turning a dial or anything. I was like, they should have cropped that a little bit tighter.
So I think actually on that note, there's a couple other things I noticed where I think this film was cropped differently when it was put on TV, which happens sometimes with like TV movies, is they shoot it in widescreen, but they plan on showing it in normal like cropped full screen since it's like the 90s on TV. Because there's a couple times where at the very beginning when the mice are escaping the lab, on the side of the screen you see a hand with cheese trying to coax one of the mice to come to the hand. And I'm like, that clearly is not supposed to be in the movie.
I rewound it when I saw that. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah. But then also, when the clone is born and Will opens the bathroom door to like see the clone and the clone freaks out and stumbles backwards, you can see the top of his jeans as he stumbles back, which was like a little weird because I was like, oh, the clone has jeans on. That's bizarre. But then like right after that, it's implied that he is naked and like Will gives him a towel to wrap himself up and like cover up. And I'm like, oh, he's supposed to be naked. But obviously they had the actor just wear jeans and were like, eh, that won't be in the shot. And then it totally is in the shot.
I just like how this movie was like, no, all the like the shit that you are actually doing when you're at home alone as a child, you should just embrace that. And like, I just like that basic, the fact that Tui becomes super popular because he memorized a dance from a music video.
Cool,
I
boy.
Love that. Look, I love it.
That was like
amazing.
The cringiest moment for me when he started dancing in the cafeteria, where I was like, oh no, what are you doing? This is the biggest mistake of your life. And then everyone started like dancing with him. And I was like, that's okay. That's not what I expected to happen right now.
Okay, here's the thing. This is one of the few movies that actually feels like a child was involved in the construction of the story. I feel like that's what I'm taking away from this moment. It's like a thing that feels like, what do I wish would happen here? Like, what would a 12-year-old Nicole like want to happen here? I would love it if I could just do the dance that I'm, the NSYNC dance that I memorized, and like have that go over well for me.
Like, specifically know. Because you had a bite of frozen pizza that you enjoyed so much you just had to get up and dance.
Yeah, the pizza bit, I did enjoy the pizza bit. I thought it was funny when he asked the girl who had a crush on him to bring a pizza to the dance, and then she brought a pizza to the dance. Yeah, very wholesome young love of just, or not even young crush. I would love someone if they brought me a pizza at a dance. Make it much better.
Okay, but who gets to date her in the end?
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting, because you have, on the one hand, you're supposed to introduce this new foreign exchange student who has no Belgian accent as your identical cousin, and he's actually into her, but, and you're not. So you have to like break up with her, and then he has to like swoop in and be like, I'm here for you.
Well, it was actual Will who kisses her, or who, I don't know if they actually, I don't remember now.
Yeah, they do.
Okay, yeah. It was actual Will who kissed her at the dance.
Oh, yeah.
So I got the impression, like she feels, it feels like she also falls into the larger category of like Will being too afraid of what other people will think. So like he actually liked her, really. But you know, whatever, like that's his whole problem is worrying too much about what other people think, and that's why he didn't want to date her. I don't know. The point is, the sequel to this movie, it's The Other Me Too, and it's like the two Wills vying for her affection after being rejected forever. It's what she deserves. So I love that for her.
Yeah.
See, this is another reason Tui should have died.
I mean, also, yes, I agree about that, too.
I am a little bit worried about Will's ability to keep introducing new dances to the school community. Tui seemed very into the music videos, picking it up, sharing it with other people. I feel like the only reason for Will's yo-yoing was so that he could do the yo-yo dance.
Oh, absolutely.
But he doesn't have any more hobbies, so he's not going to have any more dances to make up.
He can teach him the Dreamcast, the popcorn, the comic book.
My bad. Clearly, he's got a whole arsenal of them.
Most of them involve laying down.
There's a very like dad joke made by the dad early on in the movie, and I feel like that also, I don't know, primed me. Like, I laughed at the dad joke, so I was like in a good mood pretty early on. But when his parents are scolding him, his dad is particularly galled that he is failing social studies because he says you can get at least a C by just writing every answer as Washington. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why I was so delighted by that, but I feel like I was in a good mood early on. And that, I feel like that has as much of a role as anything in whether or not I enjoy these movies. Am I ready to enjoy this movie? Sometimes, no. Sometimes I'm just not.
Yeah, I think now that you're mentioning it, I was primed to like this movie because the first shot of that science class, there were three goldfish in the tank, and they were the type of goldfish that had like really, really weird heads. The best way I can explain it is it looks like there's a brain on the outside of their head, but it's filled with air, and so it's just puffing around. Very weird. I had two goldfish like that as kids, or when I was a kid. And so I saw those goldfish, and I was like, oh, I had goldfish like that. And I was just smiling, like, the second shot of the movie.
Maybe it's because I watched this, like, I watched the West Wing reunion special right before I watched this. So maybe I had, like, set my bar way too high for, like, things I enjoy. And then watched this right afterwards and was like, well, this clearly is nowhere near as good as West Wing.
I think what we're coming to find is that rewatching this, like, it really does have a lot to do, like, with these questions. These are the real questions.
Yes.
What were you doing before? How are you feeling?
Did you get a flu shot?
Did you have a horrible day at work? You know, like, these are the real questions. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we can kind of frame, like, how was your experience with this movie? Because there, so many of them are just so nothing.
Yes.
And so it's like, I am now projecting my mood onto this movie that is basically nothing. That is my summary. That's my real summary of the other me.
That's our plot synopsis, our personal plot synopsis.
Inspired by Will's discovery that being forced to stay home all the time actually sucks, we're going to remember a time when we thought that staying home all day would have been fun. And yeah, what would you have done? What would your 12-year-old self have done in Will's situation before it turned to shit on you?
I mean, I gotta like try and remember what it could possibly be like to be stuck at home with no other options.
Yeah.
I gotta like go back in my memory to the time when that was happening.
Uh-huh. It's gonna be like a big mental leap, I know.
Yeah.
To like get into the headspace of a person who can't leave their house, but try real hard.
I remember very clearly the most, aside from 2020, the like association that I have there is obviously like summer break. So there was like a stretch of time where I was just staying home and doing nothing. We were also like, around this time, 12, I had an older sister, 12, 13, and we were latchkey kids anyway. So we had a very like pretty good, like firm schedule of what we were doing. And it was pretty much staying up until 3 a.m. watching TV and waking up the next morning. Or, excuse me, the next afternoon at 1 p.m. to watch Days of Our Lives and then Passions. And then that Passions ended at, it was from 2 to 3. My mom got home from work at 3:30. So from 3 to 3:30, we were like changing out of our pajamas and pretending we had like cleaned and washed the dishes and things. So that when she got home at 3:30, we'd be like, yeah, we did chores. And then, I don't know, like playing outside, watching TV, eating things, making weird concoctions in the kitchen, and then sitting back in front of the TV to watch like Arsenio Hall until the wee. Well, that was later. What was the, that was, oh God, it was one of the, the brothers who did White Chicks.
The Wayans brothers?
The Wayans brothers.
The Wayans brothers. One of them or multiple of them had some sort of like talk show that went on from like 1 a.m. and we would watch that and then fall asleep. And that was the endless cycle of our summer vacation days. Yeah. So not much different than what Will was doing. He was like watching TV, reading things over and over. And man, I love those days. I love them so much.
Life was good during that version of staying home great. All day. Yeah. I also have a concrete answer because when I was in seventh grade, that was when I was, I say homeschooled, but like now that we're having to like really get specific about the terminology of what it means when your kids are at home and not some of them are homeschooled, and that's not what's happening really with all of them. In the interest of specificity, I was in an independent study program through LAUSD. So I had an actual teacher who was not my mother, who I met with once a week for like a half an hour and like would get my assignments and ask her questions. And like I could go to her during the week if I needed to with other questions. So I wasn't being homeschooled. I was in independent study, but I was home all day, all through seventh and eighth grade. And my mom was gone. Like my mom wasn't home. Like it was just me hanging out by myself, very much like Will. And like I went to dance classes and stuff like that after, like, you know, when other kids were done in school. But during the normal day, I slept in super late, woke up probably not long before Passions was on. I watched Passions all through seventh and eighth grade. Can tell you all about the life and times of Timmy the doll. ask me anything. I
have so much to ask.
I played a lot of, I also played a lot of video games. Specifically, I was really into Paper Mario and Roller Coaster Tycoon. And Roller Coaster yes. Tycoon, my thing to do was to like start a game. And then I would go into the like the room with the N64, which like when my siblings got home, I had to like fight for them, you know, fight over. But when I had the house to myself. So I would go sit and like play Paper Mario. I'd play it for like a half hour and then I hit pause and then I'd go check on my theme park, you know, check on the revenues of the theme park, maybe build another roller coaster, whatever, kind of like let it play. And so I would do that until around the time my siblings started coming home, and then I would get dressed and go to dance class or whatever other activities were a requirement of this arrangement from my mother, that I had to have a certain amount of social interaction with other children, and that's fair. And then I would do my homework from like 1 a.m. to 3 a.m. And that was my life. Very, very much like Will's.
I just looked up Timmy the Doll. And what have you guys done to me? I'm not going to be able to sleep for like the next week. Because this is nuts.
And my also, dream project is a Passions podcast.
Yes.
Like that is.
Oh, man. Yes.
Somebody like at some point over the summer, you know, with all the, you know, the various jokes about like the writers of 2020, I saw a like the writers of Passions wrote 2020. And I think about this tweet all the time because it's true.
Wow. I'm a little broken.
So Passions was a daytime soap opera. It was a daytime soap opera, but it had a lot of like weird magical elements. And it like the magic, only some characters had magic plots. Like some people just had like a normal, you know, like rich people, poor people, like class struggle, who, you know, being married to like four different people, like that kind of like classic daytime soap opera. But then there was like a subset of characters who had magic plots, and one of them was a woman named Tabitha, and she had a doll named Timmy, and then the doll came to life, and that's it. That's all you need to know.
I have clicked over to the Wikipedia page, and there's a picture
Yeah.
It says, Timmy and Tabitha enjoy Martimmies. I almost made it through that without laughing, but that's it. Like, I'm not going to read anything else. I feel like that's all I need to know.
There's much creepier pictures if you go to Google image search than that one. That one's delightful. Don't look at the others. Oh, so what were we talking about? I think I was struck by, like, watching this movie and realizing that, like, my life currently in 2020 is just what Will's life was at age 12 in, like, his ideal world. Because I have been playing a lot more video games, and I've been reading a lot more comic books, and I've also been popping more popcorn, strangely enough, in the past 6-7 months than I was prior to lockdown. So it was a weird thing for me where I was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm still doing like what 12-year-old me apparently would also want to do. And like, I bought more Lego sets. And like,
it's true. Follow Matt on Instagram. Watch him build things with Legos.
Yeah, this is it was a weird realization that, like, I already kind of obviously knew about myself. That, like, I haven't, I can watch old home movies and be like, yeah, that's the same guy. Like, I was like 4 and already like being the same person I am now. But yeah, so for me, it was more of like a realization moment rather than like what would I want to do or the times I experienced, because I was definitely like an outdoor kid, like a very extroverted, I need to be like riding my bike outside kind of kid all the time when I was little. So I don't think I really ever like wanted to be inside. If I could be outside, I was outside. Yeah, this is like the most I've not hung out with other people in a very long time, maybe ever.
This is absolutely wild to me because I feel like we are shifted by a stage in life almost where this is like what Will was doing was exactly what I would do when I was 12. I did not like hanging out with other kids. I didn't have very many friends in seventh grade. There were 3 other people that I ate lunch with in a teacher's classroom. And we like sat in groups of 2 on opposite sides of the room and wouldn't talk to each other for half the year. And then like halfway through the school year, we were like, maybe we should be friends and talk to each other. I struggled immensely with that, but I would play lots of video games. I think we had a GameCube at that time. That sounds correct. And so I would play things like Pikmin.
Thanks for including that like casual reminder. I was talking about N64. She's like, well, by the time I was 12, it was GameCube. So
yeah. My youth, I played a lot of Pokemon and things like that, would read a lot and would spend a lot of time outside, but just in my backyard, picking up random hobbies. Like one day I was really set on learning how to whittle. And so I like found a tree branch and was like, can I borrow a pocket knife? And my dad gave me one. And so I whittled a tree branch. Didn't really make anything, but whittled it down.
Into what?
Yeah, I think I was trying to make a sword, but then it just was too much effort. And so I gave up. But now, as an adult, I look at those golden days and I'm like, well, I was had so much energy and I felt like the time was boundless. I read so many books. And now as an adult, I'm just sad. And I don't have the energy to read books or do things. So mostly what I do when I stay home all day is sleep. Mm-hmm. And that's fun. to grow up into mental health problems instead of like the energy of my youth. I'm sorry to bring the tone of this podcast down. I think it's hilarious.
Well, you said, so that's fun. And I was like, yeah, it's fun to like sleep through this year. I agree. That's amazing.
Have you thought about catching up on passions, Sari?
I think this is on my to-do list. So when I can't sleep, when I'm just laying awake in bed, I will catch up on the life of Timmy the doll.
I was gonna make a comment about how quickly Will got over being home, like very quickly was just like, I'm over this, which I don't think would be in line with like most kids. There would be like a more prolonged period of like, this is still cool. Mm-hmm. However, I guess he did have a version of him going out and having fun. So, or like, you know, being better at life than him. So there was that like element of like being jealous about it. And bringing that forward to 2020, not that there's some version of me out there having fun, but the difference I think between like being a kid and being an adult is like being a kid at that age, there wasn't anything to do And I was fine with it. What was I going to do? Jump in my car and drive away? No, I couldn't. And so, like, now as an adult, I have my car. I've, you know, money. I have, like, the ability to go do things, but now people are telling me no. And I think that that's different than, like, being home and, like, I don't know, your world is a little smaller at that age and you don't feel, I guess, the press of that. And the want to, like, well, I want to do something. It's like, yeah, being outside, riding your bike, going in the backyard and those things, and not, like, I don't know, how we're feeling now where I'm, like, so pressed in.
Yes.
With being home. So yeah, that's a thing about being grown up and home.
It's also not just like being grown up versus being a kid. I mean, like, our thought experiment is also leaving out, like, the piece of this that we now have in common with Will, which is the degree that it was, like, mandated, you know, like, he can't, if Tui was out at school, like, Will can't, like, he couldn't really even go outside because what if the neighbor saw him playing in his backyard, right? Like, I don't know. So there's a level of like restriction that was being placed on it. And maybe if we had gotten to this movie before the pandemic started, I would have watched it and also been like, wow, he gets bored of that really quickly. I might have had that feeling. But watching it now, I was like, yeah, he's sick of being forced to stay inside. It was one thing when I chose it. It's another thing entirely when I'm not allowed to leave.
Yeah, I wonder, like, maybe that's the new motto for going forward, is we all just pretend there's scientists in a van parked outside of our house that want to kidnap us if we leave. And so that way it's like, well, clearly I shouldn't leave my house or the scientists will kidnap me in their van.
Yeah, gamify it.
No, because in this year of with the abundant conspiracy theories that are also part of this year, I can't even have fun with that game. That game isn't fun either.
Just out of curiosity now that we've taken this conversation to this place.
The dark place.
to the real world, from clones to what would our 12-year-old selves do? Man, this sucks. At what point did you guys, like, get sick of isolation? Was there any portion in the beginning of, like, March where you were like, this isn't too bad? And how long did that last? Or was it immediately like, I hate this?
I feel like for me, this is a complicated answer because I don't usually make plans in a way, but I moved in with my partner in, like, the end of January, early February, and we set the end of February as, like, our move-in date so that we could have a housewarming party in March. And so that was in my mind of, like, oh, we're going to, like, have our friends over. I'm going to get a host a party and it'll be really fun. And so I think it came down pretty quickly of, like, oh, this is not going to happen. And not only is it not going to happen, we may move out of this house before it is warm with friends. And so I became sad with the idea of staying at home very quickly, even though normally I would be fine. And then a little asterisk on that, I think part of what makes being an adult in staying indoors harder than being a kid is the responsibility, like this burden that my parents once had. So I don't know what summer break was like for them, but for me, it was great because I didn't have to think about anything. Food would just appear, or I could like rustle in the freezer and find a kid cuisine. But now I have to feed myself three times a day and show up to work so that I can earn money to continue to pay to stay in the building that I'm now staying in forever. So it's a cycle of not really feeling free by it. Because this is just now my office too.
I think that, like, you talking through that, Sari, made me realize, like, kind of my timeline as well was like event based. Like in March, it was kind of that thing of like, okay, everyone's gonna work from home, and I was kind of like, okay, we can do this for a couple months or whatever. This will be fine. And then in June, I was supposed to have my bachelor party in Chicago this year. And as it got closer and closer to June, I was like, oh, this might not happen. Like, this thing may not happen. And so as it approached the time to, like, cancel that, it was like, okay, yep, nope, this is, settling in now. Like, and obviously, many things since then, wedding-related, have been changed as well. It has stayed very real, and, but... It's definitely that thing of, I think that first couple weeks at least, and especially like that first month, it was expecting it to be done within a couple months.
Yeah, I would agree with that sense. And I like the event based thing also same. And I am curious how true that is for a lot of people. I think that it's also really interesting because it's a component of this that, like, you know, while we're all like in our own houses and shit, it means we're also having like really individual experiences of this on some level. Like, we're all going through that thing, but like there's like very different individual level experiences of it. I just in general was really slow on the uptake. Like, I did everything that I was told to do when I was told to do it. But like, I remember Nick and Sari canceled a trip in April, like weeks before we went into like not going into the office. And in my head, I was like kind of confused. I was like, I don't understand how you can know that you're not going to be able to take a trip in April. I'm taking a trip in April. Like, I don't understand why you're not taking your trip in April. Like, this doesn't make sense to me. So I don't know. Like, when it was all okay, we're working from home now, it was like there was an element of it that was scary and stressful. And it speaks to Sari's point about like, I'm an adult now and I have responsibilities and like I'm still having to work and like I'm spooked because something is happening that I honestly don't really understand. So there's that element of it. But I think it was a similar thing of once I knew I wasn't actually going to take my trip in April. And truly, I was hanging on. I was like, maybe, especially because, you know, I didn't have to, like, the flights were all at that point in time. It was super easy to cancel stuff. So I was like, well, if you're going to make it easy for me, then I'm going to hold out hope. And I don't think I actually canceled the tickets until like 2 weeks before. So but that was my point at which, oh no, like I'm like here now. This is just it. And it sucks.
Yeah. I think for me that I'm somebody who's very like routine oriented. And so the abruptness of being in the office one day, I literally came back from a trip, went back to the office on like that Thursday. And on Friday, they were like, okay, by next week, we're working from home. So I think that the abruptness of it and like trying to get oriented was like my first thing where I was like, this is really weird. But it was fine. Like, I was working through it in March. And then in April, I got laid off from that job. And so it was not like only like, oh, I'm home all the time. It was like, I literally have nowhere to be and nothing to do. Like, there, no one is expecting anything of me. No one is expecting me anywhere. And I still look back on that time of, like, I spent 3 or so months unemployed. And it was just, I wasn't even like sleeping or eating on any kind of schedule. It was just, I don't know, my time. It went into a black hole during those months. And I have like few memories. It is all a haze. So I think around that time where I was like, oh, like I have nothing right now, is when I was like, this is terrible. So like the first few weeks, it was the only point where I was like, this isn't bad. And then immediately I was like, no, I hate it here.
There's also the element of like, I feel like we all have, I don't know. I guess I don't know who you guys know, but I know people who are my like other me who are out there just behaving like everything's fucking fine.
Yes.
And I see them and like I'm so mad at them for behaving irresponsibly. Like I don't want to be them. But like also, what the fuck?
So, oh my God, we all have the other me, but it's people on Instagram.
Yeah, I have the people who I'm looking at on Instagram who are having their full giant 100-person weddings, and I'm like, that must be nice. Oh no, wait, you're the worst.
You're a bad person.
Well, yeah, and then I have moments too of like, am I the crazy one to stay inside? Like, am I? what's going on if the other me is out there being fine? And I think I felt more that way when Nick and I canceled our flight in April, because Nick was very pro canceling. I was like medium pro canceling, but seeing the cases rise in California, which is where we were headed. And then we both had to convince the people who invited us to that conference that it wasn't worth going. We were both like, something's bad disease wise in this country. And we don't want to get on a plane. And they were like, no, no, it's going to be fine. And then a couple weeks later, that conference was canceled. And so I think since COVID-19 has started becoming a thing, I've been perpetually a little bit more paranoid than everyone else around me. And now that everyone is staying home, I'm at the same level. But through the lens of Instagram, I feel like I'm more paranoid than other people around me. So I'm like, is this... What are you doing? And what am I not doing? Like, why? I don't know.
Well, because it's like the whole thing is that we're not having the like the social affirmation, right? Like by design, like because we're all in our houses, like, but then we're not getting the confirmation. Like you two, you still know there's a pandemic going on. Okay. Cause I do. who else?
I love that we've made it around to like this extended metaphor now of like in 2020, the other me are the people out there living their best lives. Because like the bulk of the middle of our conversation was talking about how the other me should die.
I was just thinking that as well as like, oh yeah, the people who are going out there and putting themselves at risk and doing all these things, you know, might end up having a shorter lifespan as well.
I'm just saying, like, narratively, it doesn't make sense for the other me to
survive. I'm not even sure you should include this in the episode.
You could keep going to make it full circle, too. There's, like, these vials of cures that could maybe help them survive. Who knows if they'll get it in time.
This is a time capsule of a moment in time, a moment in our lives that I feel like, you know, everybody who's here, like, we all get it. And one day we'll look back, hopefully.
just gotta sneak in that little bit of the sads.
To completely switch gears, let's talk about the lessons that we learned from this movie. Matt.
The lesson I had typed out in my notes seems trivial. This podcast went places that I didn't expect. And so my lesson was basically that I need to learn a cool dance by the end of COVID lockdown so that I can impress my coworkers when I go back by jumping up on the lunch table.
No, that one stands. That lesson stands. I'm glad you learned that, Matt.
Yeah.
The lesson that I learned was secure your lab rats.
Always a good lesson.
The lesson that I learned is when you're ready to commit a crime, make sure you have a good excuse for that crime. Like, it's not kidnapping, it's clone napping. That'll definitely hold up.
And the lesson that I learned is that identical cousins are a thing.
They are in Belgium.
And now to close out this journey of an episode of Cooler Than Homework, it is time for Sari to guess the plot of the next movie. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we will be watching Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire.
I just love your reaction, Mari. Okay, so my first thought in hearing this title, I don't know if you all, I was going to make an age joke again. Do any of you remember the Bailey School Kids books?
No.
No.
Oh my gosh.
We're too old.
Well, those are like what I would devour in the Scholastic Book Fair and my school library. And they all had titles. Oh, I looked them up at some point, but then I think I overwrote it with Timmy the Doll.
I looked some up. It's Aliens Don't Wear Braces, Leprechauns Don't Play Basketball, Santa Claus Doesn't Mop Floors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was all like, this mythical creature doesn't do this mundane thing. And I am going to steal the logic from every single one of those books to apply it to this movie.
I will say that's a pretty good strategy because one of these titles is like legit the plot of a DCOM. So that's a hint for like a year from now.
Just but... file that away. Remember those Bailey's books.
Yeah. Okay.
I bet it's ghosts don't eat potato chips.
I'm not going to say.
And so the way that these books go, and therefore the way that Mom's Got a Date with the Vampire will go, is there are two kids, a brother and sister, and a divorcee mom. She's been a single mom for a really long time. Barely know their dad, and they kind of talk down about him in the house. She's like, I don't need a man. I can raise you. We're all the family that we need. But then all of a sudden, this like handsome stranger swoops into town, wears mostly black, has hair slicked back, and takes out their mom on a date. And at first, they love it. They're like, oh, this is like a weird man who shows up at night, and they go off and do adult things. I don't know, like go eat a meal or things like that. But then as he shows up more regularly and like in increasingly Dracula-like clothing, they're like, oh, shit, that guy's a vampire. And then in the antics of children, they sneak out of the house and follow the man, mystery man, and their mom on some of their dates, and they see things like him leaning over toward her neck or like coughing into a cape, and then they start really conspiring that he is a vampire. And this escalates to the point where maybe she goes back to his house and they sneak inside and see things like a bloody steak on the countertop or something like that, and end up just like freaking them out when they're doing something normal, like watching TV, and they're being like, Mom, don't let him bite you and turn you into a vampire. And then he's like, I can't believe you thought that. And she's like, I can't believe you thought that. And then he provides a perfectly normal explanation for everything around him. And then everything's fine. Everything's good. And then he has like a mysterious business trip that calls him out of town. And he's like, I'm so sorry. Like, this relationship is going so well, but I don't think it can last. Like, I've got to go travel internationally. And then the last shot of the film is him like packing up a coffin or something, just on the fence enough so that you, the audience, think maybe those kids were onto something, but you never know.
Well, you didn't ask for it, but the tagline for this movie was, they aren't the only ones dying to get their mom out on a date.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just on a roll. I forgot I even had the tagline. I had the whole story, beginning, middle, and end.
You had a thing. You had it going, and that was great, and I love that. Join us next time and find out if that is the plot for Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire. We would love to hear your thoughts about this episode and this movie if you happened to watch it as well. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up at snarksquad.com/decom, or you can find us on Twitter at Decom Squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Marines.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
This podcast is a Snark Squad production, and our theme music is by Stefan Chin.
Well, I don't know how to move on to the last.
I think that's, I mean, the hopefully is the best place to end it, obviously.
I was ending it. I just have to say that we're talking about the lessons that we learned from this movie. I don't know what I'm supposed to say. Okay.